To this chapel home, we come as friends to worship. We come seeking together that inspiration which kindles the spark of the divine in our souls, so that we may turn ourselves once more into the paths of friendship and into the ways of love. Good morning, everybody. A warm welcome to you all in the church, and to you joining us via the webcam. My name is Monica. We have an open pulpit in this church when sometimes a member of the congregation takes the service. It's my privilege to be in that position this morning. So I'm going to light the chalice. At times, our own light goes out and is rekindled by a spark from another person. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude of those who have lighted the flame within us. Now we'll have hymn number one. It's number 25, God of the Earth, the Sky, the Sea. Let us pray. The prayer is from a book called The Ascension Manual by Joshua David Stone. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of people. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of people. May Christ return to earth. From the centre where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men. From the centre which we call the race of people, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Now we'll say our prayer of the church, and it's in the back of the hymn book. Love is the doctrine of this church, the sacrament, and service is a prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to serve mankind in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony with the divine, is the covenant with each other and with God. Our reader today is Colette.
Morning, everybody. I chose to read a poem this morning from a book called Lifelines. Between 1985 and 1992, under the direction of Niall McGonigal, a teacher of English, a small group of fifth formers at Wesley College wrote to famous people asking them to name their favourite poem and give the reasons why. And those who replied and had their letter chosen, their poem was published in a booklet, in booklet form, and the proceeds were given to charity. On the 22nd of January 1992, they received the following reply from Julian Barnes, the author Julian Barnes. And he said, "Dear Nicola, Paula and Alice, I have chosen an untitled poem, number 12, from Houseman's Last Poems. This poem was written in circa 1900 and could have been addressed to our whole century. It is a passionate plea for individualism, for the right to be oneself, against the bullyings of religion and of one's fellow men, against those who are sure they know all the answers. It uses simple words and is in simple couplets, but it is far from being a cool argument poem. Listen for the rage, the protest, the hurt, the stoicism. Listen in particular to the implication of that sly phrase in the penultimate line, 'If keep we can.'" So here is poem number 12. "The laws of God, the laws of man, he may keep that will and can, not I. Let God and man decree laws for themselves and not for me. And if my ways are not as theirs, let them mind their own affairs. Their deeds I judge and much condemn, yet when did I make laws for them? Please yourselves, say I, and they need only look the other way. But no, they will not. They must still rest their neighbor to their will and make me dance as they desire with jail and gallows and hellfire. And how am I to face the odds of man's bedevilment and God's? I, a stranger and afraid, in a world I never made. They will be master, right or wrong, though both are foolish, both are strong. And since my soul we cannot fly to Saturn nor to Mercury, keep we must, if keep we can, these foreign laws of God and man."
The Lion and the Mouse. Thank you. The Lion and the Mouse, and they lived in the jungle. And they, the lion is the king of the jungle, as we all know. And the mouse was very cheeky one day, and he climbed up the lion's tail and sat on the lion's back when the lion was asleep. But the lion felt him and wasn't at all happy. So he roared at the mouse to get off or he'd eat him. But the mouse said, "Ah, look, don't eat me, because, you know, you might need me someday. I could help you maybe someday." The lion felt very courageous altogether, and he decided he'd just take his moment. And the lion said to him, okay, I've just had a big, big meal, and I won't eat you, little mouse. Off you go, and don't bother me again." So the mouse went off and was running around. And then later on, there was a huge roar, and it was the lion. The lion had been trapped in a net. Some poachers had come along, and they wanted lions. So this particular lion got caught in the net. And he couldn't get out, and he was hardly able to move because it was so tight. So all the animals in the jungle came to have a look, but they didn't dare go near the lion, except the mouse. And the mouse trotted up, and he started gnawing at the net. And he gnawed and kept on gnawing at the net, and eventually he made a big hole, and the lion was able to get free. Now, so we have hymn number 145, "As Tranquil Streams That Meet and Merge." My reading today is from Bill Darlison's book, Struggling with God. It is a book of addresses that he gave over the years. And this is taken from one such address, and he calls it an aha moment. When I was about 28 years old, I had one such experience, and it has stayed with me down the years. It was an evening in early October, and I was about to return to Rome after a long summer break to continue my theological studies. My father had gone ahead to the pub where I was to meet him for a final drink before going on to the airport, and I was left alone in the house with my mother. We weren't a particularly demonstrative family. I was brought up at a time before it was fashionable to say, "I love you," indiscriminately. And moments of parting like this were very uncomfortable for both of us. I was feeling very sad. My mother wasn't old, but I knew that I would be away for a year. And we both knew that anything might happen in that time. And as I said goodbye, she, who was normally quite stoical, began to cry. We embraced briefly and awkwardly, and off I went to join my father in the pub. As I left the house and crossed the road, I was suddenly overwhelmed by an uncomfortable feeling of happiness. My sadness cleared completely, and I had this wonderful sense that my forebodings were misplaced and that everything would turn out well. Not just my anxieties concerning my mother, but everything in my whole life, and what's more, in everybody else's life, that one day all tears would be dried, and in the words of Julian of Norwich, all will be well. All will be well. And all manner of things will be well. When I reached the pub, which was a mere quarter of a mile away, the immediate and profound sense of elation had evaporated. It lasted only seconds, a minute at most. But my mood remained exuberant, and I was able to face my journey and my life without a qualm. In fact, this experience has been a source of consolation to me through half a dozen personal bereavements and through a few other occasions when I had fallen and bled on the thorns of life. This meditation, silent meditation, and Josh will play to end it. It's from Psalm 46. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. Be still. Be. a moment in time. My father said, we didn't always live in Ballingaddy. Last September, my granddaughter Ella and I met my first cousin Mary, whom I hadn't seen for about 20 years, in Bath in England. During the course of the day, Mary told me her daughter Nicola had applied for an Irish passport. Unfortunately, Mary was unable to locate her mother's birth certificate. Since she was my father's sister, also called Mary. When I returned home, I checked the 1911 census for the family. No sign of them. Then out of the blue, my father's words came to mind. I searched other townlands and eventually found them. There she was, Mary, who always said she was born in 1910, but she was 3 years old in 1911. I rang my cousin with the good news. Nicola now had a definite year and area in which to search, and will soon have her passport. Who would have thought those words, in a moment in time, would be relevant 60 years in the future? We're all familiar with such incidents. Do you remember where you were when such a thing happened? It is a memory that unites people, brings them closer together. A bond is formed particular to those people. Particularly at funerals, it is such a comfort to sit with family and friends to share memories. It is part of the healing process and makes a difference to everybody. Some years ago, Denise and Connor and I were travelling on a bus in Australia. On the journey, we saw two rainbows side by side. We chatted with the other people on the bus about them, and we all agreed that four pots of gold would be a great find. A few months ago, the three of us were on a train to Killarney. Again, we saw two rainbows, a lovely reminder of the sight on the other side of the world, years before. The words, a moment in time, came to my mind. I suppose one of the most iconic references to a moment in time is described in the poem Daffodil by William Wordsworth. The poet is going for a walk with his sister Dorothy when they come across, as she described it, a long belt of daffodils. The beauty and vivacity of the flowers gave the poet so much pleasure and joy that years later he still feels the same emotion when he recalls the memory. For oft when on my couch I lie in vacant or in pensive mood, they flash upon that inward eye which is the bliss of solitude. And then my heart with pleasure fills and dances with the daffodils. Such beautiful words to evoke the memory and emotions of the scene. To avail of the benefits of unannounced encounters, one has to be open to their possibilities. Most people at any given time are going about their business and having general conversations and interactions. It is impossible to remember every word of every conversation or communication, nor is it possible to remember every place we've been. We take time and moments for granted. Each moment moves on and attaches itself to the next, and before we know it, hours have passed, turning into days, then weeks, and so on. Susan Pierce and Martina Sheehan in The Currency of Care say, attention is precious. Take care of it. People say they need more time. We can't make more time, but we can give more attention to what we are doing. Everyday activities. We don't pay much attention to these as they're repetitive. Taste your cup of tea. Little moments, don't take them for granted. For example, I asked a woman at a checkout in a shop who wasn't paying much attention if she was having a bad day. This resulted in a little conversation and we parted laughing. Later, passing that shop, the woman was in good form with other people, thereby putting good energy into the money, currency being exchanged. The currency of care. Keep the currency of care moving and returning it to yourself. In Mark's Gospel, chapter 10, verses 46 to 52, Blind Bartimaeus receives his sight. As Jesus and his disciples and a large crowd were leaving Jericho, a blind man, Bartimaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on me." Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." So they called to the blind man, "Cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you." Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. "What do you want me to do for you?" Jesus asked him. The blind man said, "Rabbi, I want to see." "Go," said Jesus, "your faith has healed you." Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road. I would have thought that a blind man sitting by the roadside begging would not have noticed Jesus and the disciples passing, particularly when there was a large crowd of people. But Bartimaeus was not insensitive to what was going on around him. He was aware and awake to the possibilities of how Jesus could help him. He didn't waste any time calling out to Jesus, making sure Jesus heard him. He did not allow himself to be pushed aside by the crowd. He grabbed the moment and made the most of it. He was rewarded, receiving his sight and becoming a follower of Jesus. He really believed, and "Ask, it will be given to you." For me, it begs the question, if I were Bartimaeus, would I have had the courage and tenacity to insist on talking to Jesus? Would I have missed him passing by, distracted by the crowd? Would I have said, "I won't bother Jesus. I'm only a poor blind man. He wouldn't want to talk to me." Would I have missed a most amazing moment in time? It is so easy to get into a rut and ignore the possibilities of change. Caroline Miss, in Intimate Conversations with the Divine, says, "Lord, help me stay consciously in grace. Every moment of my life, I am participating in an act of creation. Every thought, every feeling, every sensation generates a consequence, a next thought, an emotion, a choice." So when we wake up in the morning, we usually have some plan for the day. Because we think it through beforehand does not mean the day will unfold accordingly. Most people act and react without giving much thought to the deed, responding to a situation as it unfolds. But by being mindful or aware in the moment, what is said or done can have a different impact. A word or deed in a harsh or thoughtless way can leave a hurtful, lasting impression, just as a kind and uplifting word or act will give joy and encouragement to the recipient. While most of us breathe without thinking, in an effortless way, we can learn to attend to the time and value the experience. We only have the present moment. The past is gone. It may become a memory. The future is not yet ours. Now we'll have the offertory. And while the offertory is being taken up, you can sing hymn number 331. Life is the greatest gift of all. And our notices, Fair Tread tea and coffee are downstairs. February Oscult is on the table outside. Pam leads the weekly lunchtime meditation service here in the church on Wednesdays from 1:05 to 1:35. These sessions can also be accessed live on the webcam. I would like to say thanks to Josh for his help with choosing the music, helping me to choose the music and the hymns, playing them. To Colette for her reading. Our welcomer is Janet, who also brought the flowers. And tea and coffee today are looked after by Tony, Sheila and Frank. And I want to thank you all for bearing with me and being very supportive. It is quite daunting being up here. But thank you. I didn't expect that now. The final hymn is Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee, hymn number 29. and for our blessing. Let us treasure every moment, know the value of each good deed, and discover greatness in small things. May we see in the passing the eternal. In each sunbeam, love. In each raindrop, wonder. In each leaf, beauty. And in every human soul, God's living spirit. Amen.